What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and I'm so very fortunate to be talking to the one and only Eno Saris as our guest today. Eno, great to see you. We've got another week of pitching in the books. And how you doing?
I'm hoping we're past the injury conversation.
Oh, please. Yes. I mean, that's why we saw Jared Jones 59 pitches in five innings.
Oh, gosh. Let's have a whole podcast about that. Why don't
we? Was that what you were going to bring up?
No.
You said you had something for me?
I've got a real, let's just jump into it because I've got, I've got a topic that I know you don't need to prepare for at all.
Let's go.
And I'm like, I'm wading into this knowing that like you are going to be overprepared and blow my analysis out of the water, but I don't know that's true.
What do we got?
I'm willing to like loft the ball up softly towards you,
man,
so that you can hit out of the
park. I'm so excited to let you down.
What's going on with Pablo Lopez?
Oh man.
So let me just do my thing first.
Yeah. Yeah, please.
Because I was looking at his stats and like almost everything's like sort of within the realm of normal, like in terms of movement and you know, velocity and you know, types of pitches and kind of his strategy, I think, from what I could glean. But for some reason, swing rate on his curveball has just gone down, and in fact swing rate across the board has gone down. So batters are just not swinging much. In fact, I think his swing rate right now against him is the worst of his career. And so I just think that that's an interesting thing that we've done some studies on. I've seen some stuff. I don't know that I know exactly what makes a batter swing. I saw one study that said that pitches that would be strikes if they were fastballs garnered more swings. And that made sense to me given, you know, how batters work. But I also had someone tell me they weren't able to replicate that study. So, you know, I just had a conversation with Sonny Gray about his sweeper. And he said he had to add a cutter to the sweeper so that he could get swings on the sweeper. You know, by throwing the cutter in the zone, he puts in their head, okay, here's a pitch. So it is tunneling that gets swings, I guess.
Right.
But it's not always off the primary fastball, you know? So, you know, he's got a cutter sweeper tunnel that Sonny Gray is working with. But I don't know what the tunnel is for Pablo Lopez on the curve, unless it's curve sweeper or curve change. But there's something there. In terms of movement, like his sweeper is down like a half tick. Here's the weird part. Here's the part where I'm going off of the numbers and I want some feedback from you about.
Sure.
Which is just, I'm talking to Sonny Gray about all this sweeper thing. He doesn't even know what to call it. His sideways breaking ball, right? And he shows me three different grips and he tells me the story of how he started throwing it in 2019 and over the last 4 years, how that pitch has changed, how the pitches around it have changed to make it work better, all this stuff. And it, you know, in light of Pablo Lopez's changes last year, you know, I had this like weird thought, which is like, there's this, and then like, I talked to Jordan Hicks about his splitter and he just said his splitter's better in the second year. We talked about that a little bit.
Yep. Yeah, it was fun.
Just this idea that there's a tension between constantly reinventing yourself so that you're not the same as the scouting report, right?
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And the tension between that and being comfortable who you are, like being comfortable, being able to do the things that you're doing. Like how much can you think on the fly? I think that was one thing that Greinke did really well, was he was able to replicate a pitch pretty quickly. And then he was able to do things that weren't in the scouting report. I saw him throw high power changeups to lefties, like high and like, basically front door power changeups to people that were that took a lot of pitches. And I was like, there are not a lot of people out there that can throw a front door power changeup, you know? So, so I just wonder what that relationship is. And basically what, like, I know that you follow Pablo closely. So I just wonder, you know, the sinker, he's not using as much and he's and not getting as many swings. So there's something going on that's a little bit different this year. I am keeping him in my top 10. That's coming out on a Friday, and I'm not overreacting, but I am sort of like searching for answers as to even why the numbers are down a little bit this year.
Yeah. So I, man, it's kind of funny. Obviously I'm a huge Pablo Lopez fan and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the beginning of the year, generally when it comes to like the top 10 guys, I don't really focus too much on them because it's not the, you know, there's so many other guys that are, we need to spend our time on that we don't really know about. And for the most part, unless there's like a massive velo drop, unless there's something really concerning about their arsenal, then I'm not really going to, you know, say anything about it because we know the history. We know what these pitches are capable of. We know that baseball is a very weird sport that some games you just don't have the right forcing or the right moment or something, and the guy takes advantage of it. And maybe you just can't put away a guy for a certain game, and that's kind of that, right? Like the first game of the year, Pablo Lopez was just amazing. And the only real blemish was a terrible sweeper to start the game that was knocked for a home run, right? And that amazing Cole Reagan's Pablo Lopez game. Oh my gosh, that was just the best opening day ever. Yeah, can we talk about that latter guy again? No, I'm just kidding. With Pablo Lopez, what I've really taken away from the last two games is that his four-seamer hasn't been as good. A sub 60% four-seamer strike rate in his last start is, whoa, that's not quite it. If I remember correctly, his two strike rate last year with his four-seamer actually was above 30%. It was, hey, I'm leaning into this thing now. He has not been doing that. It's been like closer to 20%, 22% in two strikes with that four-seamer, throwing it more in at the start of at-bats as opposed to at the end of them. And its put-away rate is down too. So you're going to get fewer strikes then. If you are, if you know, the four-seamer is that kind of strike pitch for him. And when that's away, that's not doing like 70% or whatever, then you are going to see fewer swings, I would think too, right? Then you're expecting more of the secondary stuff. That means you're able to be a little more passive on it. I also...
Supposedly more IVB on the four-seam this year, right, though?
So yeah, he's someone who's... improved too, and maybe there's something about that, about just a different feel or release of it that is not quite settled yet,
not quite commanding at the same.
Yeah, but honestly, if there's something about Pablo that we know, it's two things that is just always consistent year to year over a large enough sample. Four seamer command, changeup is always there. That's literally his phrase. The changeup is always there. It wasn't as amazing in that last start. Okay. And then you see the other additions from last year, really the sweeper being a big thing that you were talking about, right? And yeah, that wasn't as good. I think you mentioned in the spring that there was something kind of bothering him and that was preventing him from kind of having the right sweeper, and it was better by the start of the year. It might still be bothering him, but I'm not really overtly concerned in this way. And yeah, I mean... it's Pablo Lopez who's still, even like in these bad starts, are still like three earned runs or so. There's an idea when it comes to every single pitcher that you are going to have essentially 25% of your season is going to be you at your best. 25% of your season is going to be you at your worst. And then 50% of the time it goes either way, right? It's just a way that I've heard it phrased. I think that's great. Mm-hmm. And it's about making sure that 50% is not the Patrick Corbin 50%. Right? Because we know he does 25% good starts every year, right? It's the 50% that are always bad. And I think what makes an ace is making those 50% as good as anyone else, right? And those 25% are always going to be there. Like Gausman just was like six or under the weather. He had a bad start. And what do? We just go, yeah, okay, cool. We move on next day. It's fine. Otherwise, all these guys would have like a 1.5 ERA for the year. Like you're not going to do that. So... right now, I'm not really concerned about Pablo Lopez. I see someone who still has all the tools that he used to have, more so than he did before last season. Good team context, is able to go seven innings, which you don't see like at all anymore. I'm not concerned really that there's something underlying that is just making him worse and all of a sudden a different pitcher. I think it's just a little bit of a moment.
you know, one thing I did notice just now is that the curveball had more horizontal movement last year. And in his third start, he kind of got it back to where he'd had it, I think.
He hasn't thrown many of those this year. I mean, it's really just been, it's been like four.
It can't be the curveball. You
know what I mean? Yeah, well, right. Yeah. I really think it's the four seamer just not being as well as dependable. Like we see the full season numbers, but also understand that it's the first start, it was great. Like one third of his games have been great. Two of them haven't been there. So I see like a just under 70% strike rate as four seamer, but really that first one was like 84%, right? So it's hard for me to dive in so much at the moment with all of it, because it is, you know, sometimes it's just kind of game to game. And
that's there, you know, just sort of jumping off that, because you know, I'm sure you're working on rankings or already have, and
every Monday, you know, we're called Pitcher List for a reason.
Yes,
a
list.
Every Monday.
What's the name of your site again?
Pitcher List.
So I don't work for Pitcher List, so mine's coming out Friday, and I think there was a lot of attrition at the top because of injury, and so mostly everybody kind of took a seat. It was a kind of musical chairs where everyone just kind of moved up.
Yep,
because there was no more Spencer Strider and so on.
Garrett Cole.
Garrett Cole at the top. But I wonder if I can push you a little bit and just tell me if there was anybody or there is anybody that has dropped a little bit in your top 10. Is it Luis Castillo? And I know every spring Luis Castillo's velo is down, but his velo is down compared spring to spring.
Sure.
And so when I see things like that, sometimes I wonder, like if Lindor is going to be slow every start of the season as a hitter, right? At some point he'll be 36 and it won't come back.
Right.
You know, or 38 or whatever it is. And Luis Castillo's not there yet, but I just wonder, if we're going to explain it away every year, and then one year it's going to be like, whoa, maybe it is actually a problem. So is there anybody in that vein that you are a little bit worried about in your top 10, top 15?
Well, it's really tough, right? I mean, it's what is a safe starting pitcher?
So a flip side of that is, so I have like Bobby Miller and Framber Valdez, right? And they're supposedly short-term injuries. And what I would like to do is put them somewhere where everybody ahead of them is safe and good.
Yeah.
And they are probably coming back soon. I don't want to ding them too hard.
Yeah.
Because they might be back in a week or two, you know?
Yeah.
So I right now have them at like 22 and 23, suggesting to me that there's only like, with Justin Steele. So suggesting to me that there's only like 20 pitchers that I really just trust.
Right. Here's what I do. So obviously I can't believe this. I'm saying this out loud, but this is literally my 11th season doing, 10th season doing the list. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I have certain systems of like how I do the ranks, and the one that I established that like, I went back and forth, iterated. This is what I do. If you are not starting this week, if you're not confirmed to start, you are off the list.
So you don't even have Bobby.
I can't, because honestly, it is
because impossible. You're going to have another list next week.
Yeah. And it's also impossible to actually tell you where they are relative to a missed start or two. And it's just like, oh, I can't deal with this.
Well, because everybody's league is different. And
right. And it's just nuts. And I say, look, this is your relative rank. Like imagining that you're healthy and what we expect you to be, where would you be? And I'd do like a 10 spot range. So Bobby Miller is 10 to 20, and Framber Valdez is, to me, is 20 to 30, really like 15 to 25. Same with Justin Steele and so on. So I don't know where I would put him. If Bobby Miller were like totally just healthy right now, I would have him where I had him before, I think, would be around like 15 or so. Yeah. Something like that, right? Like 13. Because we know that Bobby Miller's dope and makes us feel dope. Kevin
Gausman was a big dropper for me.
That's the one that I was thinking of. Was Gausman as the biggest one? I mean, this week before George Kirby went yesterday. I did drop him into 10, which was collectively five spots, moving up Freddie Peralta, who was, just looked unbelievable.
Yeah, Freddie is now six for me.
It's so crazy.
He went up from 12 to 6. I was hoping you'd do that, because I know you don't love the crossfire. And
I mean, I don't care. This is a better four-seamer, and like, dude is just insane right now. And like,
36 K-minus BB.
Right. I can't put him underneath Logan Webb, who does not have the slider that we want, right?
Yeah. I have them right next to each other. Webb's just
right. So do I. 8 and 9. So
yeah.
But the thing is, like, so I have this first tier of guys that have potential SP1 overall, right? Of like 30% strikeout rate with also the innings and everything like that. And Logan Webb to me isn't that. So he has to be underneath it. George Kirby isn't that, unfortunately, because I don't think he's going to have a 30% strikeout rate.
Right.
So I have him underneath. Gausman is weird, and I hate weird. You should not have someone that's like in your top five that is feeling, making you feel weird, because we don't know. Are you okay? Are you not?
Right.
So I had to move that one.
Sub 100 stuff plus is hard to put in my top 100. Right. I mean, I do have a sub 100 in Zach Wheeler, but
no, Wheeler
strikeout minus walk rate is great. And I think
Wheeler also increases fastball velocity in the last one. And he allowed a grand slam in the sixth inning after five unbelievable innings.
And I guess that the Phillies had been playing a lot of cold weather. So I'd been focusing, in our last one, I'd been focusing on that last start, but I guess the ones before it had been cold too.
And Nola had his curveball back, fortunately. I have him at 14 currently. But the other interesting one is Tarek Skubal, who had his velocity drop at the end of the previous one, and then fell down to 95, 96, as opposed to like the 97, 98 that we've been seeing, which is fine. Like, that's what it was last year.
Right, that's so fun.
But the biggest pushback I had about Tarek Skubal after last year, it was pretty much in like October, November, was, okay, first of all, do we know if the velocity is going to stick at all? Because it was up, and it did. So, I mean, that's cool. So I corrected that in my ranks. But his four-seamer shape isn't good, and I didn't know if he can get away with not the greatest four-seamer locations. Like, he's not someone that is like Joe Ryan at the top of the zone, like, knows how to do this. Zach Wheeler knows how to do this. Tarek Skubal is just like, all right, I'm just going to kind of chuck this thing around here, and then the changeup's going to be that good, and my slider's kind of like a cutter and not really a big whiff pitch, and that's it. And Skubal only had like three whiffs on his four-seamer his last start, and I'm going, it makes me feel a little bit weird. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, but the weirdness starts so early, man. I don't understand. I think it's an offensive.
That's why we don't go for starters early in drafts, guys. Don't do it. I mean,
I'm like, Corbin Burns is good.
Yeah. He's my SP1, but I'm like, I don't want him to be my SP1. Honestly, when am I allowed to put Cole Reagans at SP1? Okay, just tell me when.
When is it not crazy? Oh man, I still because have I mean, a like you watch him and ERA just projection using stuff plus, and I don't know why. Why is that? I'm just ignoring that.
Well, the four seamer honestly gets hit too hard with the Cole Reagans. I know it's weird for me. So, Nick, you're not allowed to say bad things about Cole Reagans. I'm like, I'll be honest, that he has a 42% ICR, that his whiff rate on it is just 11%, despite throwing 98 or 96, but really like 98, 99 at times. He does good IVB, but it's actually it's a 0.7 height adjusted VAA. So it's not flat. Extension is just 6 foot. So it doesn't surprise me that he's getting, you know, he's allowing hits on pitches in the zone. That's annoying. So
he's not going to be a perfect IVB guy. His slot, like the fact that he's like
17 IVB,
he's a pronator. I mean, 17 is okay, but it's not.
I'll take that.
Take it. Right.
Yeah.
But it's not standout. Although, you know, I saw an interesting tweet from Lance Rozowski suggesting that some of the batter improvement against 18 plus IVB was short term.
Oh, why would that be?
He says the batters are back up again against I didn't plan on this real quick. So
by the way, everyone, I've already mentioned to Lance that at some point I want to bring him on this show, because Lance is a fantastic pitching mind, and he should 100% be on the craft with us here.
Oh yeah, that would be a fun one.
That'd be such a good time.
Here he goes. League performance against four-seam fastballs with 18-inch vertical break is the worst in the pitch striking era.
So batter performance.
Yeah, batter performance is So pitchers are struggling. Doing better on them again. Yeah. So
yeah.
I don't really understand that. Sometimes, you know, there are things that happen over the course of the season that are league wide. Like one of the things that's really interesting is that batters don't swing as much. Now think of that with what we were talking about with Lopez. Batters don't swing as much early in the season. That's just weird thing. Right. They don't swing as much in April as they do in the other. And I was just talking to Lars Nupar about this, and you know, I was like, do you think it's just a feeling out process? And he said, he was like, well, me personally, I'm like four games in. So, you know, I just feel behind, but I think that is still a window into the mindset, which is we're just trying to figure out what everyone's throwing, what's happening, what it looks like, what's the new pitch that everyone's throwing this year. Like what's going on, you know? Right. So but there's also, a little bit of like, I'm going to swing
the summer. You just want to jump around. You just want
to go. Yeah, right. When it's cold, you're kind of like, swinging just hurts when it's cold.
Right. You're not as excited. You're not as jittery. You're not as like ready to go, you know? Yeah. I totally understand that.
I haven't let you give a name, but there's too much of a natural segue between what we're talking about and my second topic. So,
well, we're going to save that one.
All right.
For after this break. So, Eno's got the perfect segue, everybody. What is it? What do we got?
Well, we were just talking about our top 10, and while I was doing that ranking, the top 10 ranking, I was thinking about, you know, sort of building the perfect pitcher, or you know, what the perfect pitcher would be if I had to pick one of these young pitchers. We've been talking about Tarik Skubal, we've been talking about Cole Reagans. Maybe your answer is Cole Reagans, that's fine. But I was like, why not Grayson Rodriguez? And, you know, I'm pushing him in the ranks. His projections are good. I think even the projections are hiding the fact that park factors in Baltimore probably haven't caught up to the reality of what Baltimore is, because usually you do 3-year park factors. Sure. There's still some noise in there. Yeah. And so I was just thinking like, okay, he's shown, if you do a bigger sample last year and this year, he's shown above average locations on his two fastballs and his curve and his change. Okay, so he has at least average-ish command of four pitches. It's a wide arsenal. The cutter isn't great, and he used it too much for a while. But now that he's using it more as a spice and less as a foundational piece, you know, like as a little thing, a change of pace or whatever. Yeah. It's a five pitch arsenal. Command of most of those pitches, hard IVB on the four seam, decent run on the two seam, a big changeup that has been with him his whole life, and a curveball that's strong. The one thing that was missing for me was a slider. And it's kind of, we've seen Yoshinobu Yamamoto kind of have similar issues where it's like, man, it would be better if you just had a plus slider. And then we have Max Meyer coming out here who has nothing but plus slider.
Unbelievable. You know, I got some pushback because I was saying like Max Meyer's in AAA. I'm like, well, compared to like Jackson Jobe and Paul Skeens, I'm like, yeah, he's a low ceiling. Everyone's like, he's a low ceiling. He just destroyed the Atlanta. I'm like, okay. It's just the slider. It has a good game. That's great. But yeah, no.
But I also think that like, you know, just having a plus slider and having
is a great thing.
Command, I think it's because it's so great to have a pitch that you have that you can use for command and action. So otherwise, like in the parlance of CSW, it's great to have a pitch that can get you called and swinging strikes.
Look at
so that. Like that's why I love like, you know, I do want to start with, if like I've been building my perfect pitcher, I do want to start with a plus fastball though. Because that can be a swinging strike pitch and a called strike pitch.
Absolutely. You
know? Mackenzie Gore has just a fastball and the other pitches he's trying to figure out.
I know we talked about him last time, but my gosh, I mean, that start was so good against the Athletics. Oh, and now he's
look what you
tough.
Can do with a plus fastball, you know? It's like, so I want a plus fastball. I can't make Max Meyer, you know, the pitcher I pick for the future or whatever.
Right.
But
Grayson, if he has that slider, then you feel like all of a sudden he becomes something new.
But then there's like the relationship between stuff and command. So like, do you like Kirby, who has the wide arsenal and great command, and the stuff is not quite as outstanding as the rest? You know, Tyler Glasnow is now a four pitch pitcher. You know, there's like, which, like, where are you leaning when you are you, is it just Cole Reagans?
it isn't, because, I think the problem, I mean, what's interesting about Cole Reagans right now is that the slider isn't like taking over as I wanted it to. He's actually not really having a good feel for it. His cutter is absurd to me. I mean, I think it's crazy when he throws that thing inside to a righty. It's just complete game over. It's like it's an out or a swing strike, or it's just stupid. And his four seamer isn't actually bullying as much as we want it to. Mm-hmm. And that bothers me. Honestly, give me Jared Jones. Give me Jared Jones, and then you go over time. Like, cool, eventually you're going to get a change up or something else in there. I mean, I say it I often.
Stuff likes his other pitches, but he's basically, what's he throwing? He's throwing like 90% fastball, right? So slider, right?
The comp I was giving with Jones in the spring was Spencer Strider, which I'm sure many other people did too. But that was just like, if you're looking for the next Strider, it's him.
Right.
However, if you're telling me that his changeup and his curve, for example, are both positive in the stuff realm, he just doesn't throw it. Well, do you remember that conversation with someone else throwing four seamers and sliders because they didn't want to allow a hit on their changeup or curve?
Well, that was Strider.
he didn't have as good of one though as the other guy, which is Jacob deGrom, who stopped
doing it. Right.
He was like, well, yeah, this is like everyone else's number two pitch. I understand both my curve and change, but anytime I let a hit on any of those pitches, I thought to myself, well, why didn't I just throw my slider or my fastball? And that makes all the sense. And when you're talking about if you have a slider that is both called strikes and whiffs, I hear a pushback a lot about, I mean, we've had this conversation about guys that are two pitch pitchers versus three pitch pitchers. And you made a really great point saying, look, just having a mediocre third pitch makes those other ones so much better that you are a better pitcher. I often think of it as you really need to have three things in your arsenal, right? You need to have a primary pitch that is harder than the others that you can throw for strikes confidently. Like you can throw in the zone and not just get destroyed.
Yeah.
And you need that as a secondary pitch too. And then you need to be
able to throw the four seam with two strikes.
Right. So you need one of those to be.
You need a no strike pitch and a hard no strike pitch and a hard two strike pitch.
And you need.
They don't always have to be the same pitch though.
Well, right. That's what I'm getting at. So you need like one pitch in your arsenal that's like, cool, this is my 2-0 pitch or my 0-0 pitch or whatever. Mm-hmm. Cool, I have. And you need one that is a primary and a secondary for both of those things.
Yeah.
And then you need one other thing that's your 0-2 pitch. And it could be the same thing.
And like, if we're talking ideal, a change of pace pitch that you can steal strikes with when they just spit on it or they're looking at some other stuff.
My favorite has always been fastball changeup slider. I love, honestly, I'm like kind of anti-curve these days. Mm. And I am more cutter than I am curve.
But look how many people with plus curves seem to age really well. I mean, Charlie Morton, right, Adam Wainwright.
Lower offering because it's less reliant on velocity, probably.
Right, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, Hendricks then decided to not throw it anymore. I don't know why, but all right. And, you know, that's an interesting question, too. How long do you think that Hendricks lasts inside that Cubs rotation?
Oh, I don't know. Like, I'd rather have Ben Brown in there.
All right. Do you think, like, it's within the next week or so? Like, Ben Brown theoretically
doesn't. It's also last year of his contract, right?
I don't know. Probably.
I think so. Yeah.
So that might be it. I mean, it's
oh, what, but last thing about Jared Jones, that's interesting is, let's say in the DeGromian context that you created, there's always, and in the time that we are now where everyone's like freaking out about injuries, there are two markers for Jared Jones that are interesting that are different than DeGrom in perhaps a good way when it comes to health. One, he doesn't throw his slider 90 plus.
Oh.
It's a hard slider.
Yeah.
But for me, there's a little bit of a marker there with 90 plus because what the sort of direct research, the Modus sleeve research at Driveline suggested is that per MPH, breaking balls can be more stressful but they're usually thrown 85. So a 99 mile an hour fastball is still more stressful than an 85 mile an hour breaking ball. However, when you're talking about 92, 94 mile an hour sliders, I do think you're talking about a stressful pitch. And then the other flip side is he maxes out. Jared Jones maxes out at 101.
Yeah, he doesn't go there.
And he sits 97.
Yeah, that's a really, I like that.
And the league average is 3.2 between those two. And Glenn Fleisig's sort of rule of thumb about stressing yourself out and throwing so close to your max is around 3. So when I see that sort of 3+ mile an hour thing, I think, you know, that's nice. And the phrase that I'm trying to make more popular is, you know, and you've heard it before, is have 100, you know, sit 96.
Sure. Yeah.
And to some extent, yeah, Jared, you know, sits more 97, 98, but at least he has that extra 3 ticks in there.
Yeah, that's really good.
And I don't think it's been, you know, I don't have his full injury history in front of me, but I don't think it's been.
It wasn't a flag for me in the preseason or anything like that. So yeah, I don't think so either.
You know, he's been just sort of, you know, kind of building up his innings in a regular fashion. No big missed years.
I'm gonna give you 2 minutes of a spotlight here. How did you feel about the Pirates pulling him at 59 pitches?
I think that they probably have a number. It might be innings, it might be pitches that they have of a full season number in their head. They have this for Paul Skenes, I know. And if they have a full season number in their head and they're winning, this could be as much about using him in a way that they can still use him in September.
Sure.
And more that than necessarily keeping him healthy right now. And and the other thing that I know is that it's better to continually pitch rather than to be ever completely shut down. Completely shut down requires a whole re-ramping process that can take months in the preseason. So you don't want to completely shut them down. So 59 pitches is better than 0 pitches. It's not maybe as good as 100. But I think it's about seeing his season holistically and thinking, hey, we were good last year before we lost O'Neill Cruz. We're good. We're doing pretty good right now. We're about to get Paul Skenes. Apparently, I don't know, this is how they're saying it, but that Paul Skenes' girlfriend or wife is like has a gymnastics at LSU. And like her season ends on Saturday, and they said they wouldn't call him up until her season was over so that she could be there. I don't know. That smells rotten to me.
That's unbelievable.
So we've got Paul Skenes coming up next week. And I think the idea is, hey, when we put Paul Skenes on this rotation and Jared Jones, like all of a sudden, you know, we go 1-2-3 with the best of them in terms of rotation. Like maybe we'll be there in September. So maybe we want Jared Jones in September.
And when do you think the Pirates are going to be dealing Billy Falter to the Rays?
They do have a pipeline between the Rays and Pirates. Bob Steve, Robert Falter Stevenson
is the guy. It's like the most, okay, cool. Here's your IVB upstairs, four seamer, like 91 or something. It makes so much sense to me. I'm surprised he's not even there yet.
Yeah.
It will happen.
I mean, they're going to have a rotation crunch at some point, I guess.
I'm telling you. No, I mean, I think with the Jared Jones stuff, there is really this mentality. I think that, you know, you see the 59 pitches and we're like, oh my gosh, what has this game become? All of this. At the same time, it doesn't matter what the pitch number is. What is the performance? It's 5 innings of dominance, and that's beautiful. And that's great. And just be so happy you got that and not be focused on the 59 stuff. And honestly, be thrilled. Like, I think what is fun to me is to realize, like, let's say Jared Jones did this on 80 pitches, right? Or he does it in 59. And we're more upset because he did it at 59.
Like, he was efficient.
Right?
He did pretty good.
And like, oh, now we're upset at something else. Like, don't be upset. Be happy because pitching is attrition. That is Steven Lyman's phrase, and I love it so much. So awesome. You got the thing, and with a lowered health risk. Fantastic.
There is a piece on Baseball Prospectus that every pitch makes you worse.
Right. There it is. Yeah.
Over the course of a season.
Exactly. So I, oh, that makes me really weirded out about like judging guys in April. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Who's throwing the most pitches? You're down a rank.
By the way, you mentioned, yeah, there you go. You mentioned Yoshinobu Yamamoto in there. And actually, it's interesting too. You're talking about kind of finding a slider and everything. Same thing with Shota Imanaga, where Imanaga's throwing like just four seamers. And it's like, great, but we need like that slider cutter working more, because this is not as sustainable, I don't think, of just throwing as many four seamers as he is. By the way, yes, we do have our new shirt on the site. Shota, I'm an AGA in different colors. I'm an AGA Imanaga. It's wonderful. But with Yamamoto,
check here.
Yeah.
On Shota. Our Stuff Plus numbers do not like his fastball.
Ooh.
And Yamamoto's fastball also. And I, one thing about the WBC that I didn't think about.
Yeah.
Is that I do think that when we run Stuff Plus, we run it sort of, you're still comparing to the other people in the yes. sample.
Oh, you're thinking of like the bad pitchers and the WBC is worse than the
Oh, plus they were throwing in smaller samples. So they were in throwing in smaller outing. More max.
That said, there were still a lot of really good pitchers Stuff Plus
on Shota's fastball, which is actually above average for four seamers, but like 99 versus 97 or something. So it's basically average, which is surprising to me. And then Yamamoto, we've got 87 on the fastball.
So, you wanna hear something fun?
Yeah, what do you guys got?
Shota Imanaga is not this isn't Stuff Plus, this is including location, everything. 99th percentile four seamer.
Wow.
Okay, so 18 IVB.
High lock is great.
High lock is phenomenal. Oh, look at you even just using high lock, not even high location. High lock. It's so good. Okay, 18 IVB, 1.4 height adjusted VAA, and using it, right? Yeah. And those two combined, oh, that is going to have those good results. We also have Striker up on our site, by the way, guys. It's strike minus ICR rate, which is essentially saying, are you throwing strikes with the pitch? That is good, but are you allowing more bad contact as a result? So if you subtract the two, then you actually say like, no, this is just generally a good effective pitch. Yeah, this is 82nd percentile of all fastballs, which is really, really nice. And the thing that I like about Imanaga's heater is that, yeah, this is going to work in my view. It's only a 10% swing strike rate, but he just throws so many of them. And I feel that, wait, hold on, you've thrown 7% sweepers. Like, wait, that's supposed to be a major aspect. It's not really supposed to be fastball splitter. It's supposed to be really four of fastball, slider, and then splitter and curve. And I'm curious to see kind of how that develops. I would think that he'd be so primed for a cutter in here, or just something more like a gyro, considering how he's over the top with that four seamer, and less of the sweep. But that's curious and something to
plus likes the slider. Is that a sweeper?
Yeah. The other side of it is Yamamoto. And Yamamoto drives me up the wall, you know, and really, I can't emphasize this enough. Can you please do some large piece about the Dodgers and their
where he's locating his fastball?
Yeah, their lack of affection for high four seamers. And this is the guy I wanted to talk about, which is the perfect segue. You're welcome, everybody. I have such a long rant to give you about Yamamoto, and I'm going to save it. We're going to talk about that after this break. So here's the thing, you know, okay?
Wow.
Yoshinobu Yamamoto has a four-seamer that doesn't have great IVB. It's like 15 inches or so. It's pretty average, like the most average IVB. It actually does not get much extension, which honestly, watching his mechanics and it's very much as drop and go, doesn't surprise me. It's not this big gear up to get out further, right? It's just like 6.5 as opposed to like 7 feet. 95 is good. We're happy with 95. It's again, not like 97, 98. It's close to his max. Oh, there you go. But the number one quality for Yoshinobu Yamamoto's four-seamer is how flat it is. Mm. It is 97th percentile of all four-seamers thrown by starting pitchers at 1.7. You see a 1.7 and you think, my gosh, this is the pitch that should just dominate always up top. You're giving
throwing it more in the lower third of the zone than the top third of the zone.
It's crazy to me. It is absolutely bonkers. Second percentile high location for the guy that has the fastball that should be upstairs.
All right, this is a story. I'll work on this.
Thank you, because it's wrong. 92nd percentile YM lock, that is middle height. 94th low lock. Yeah. Why?
Don't do this.
And this is a thing on the Dodgers, right? I mean, I remember when I talked about this with you for Bobby Miller. I said, Bobby Miller's got a flat fastball too. He throws 100. Like, him going lower is giving them more opportunity. And I think you mentioned, well, the slugging on those pitches versus this down here over there, which I always say, well, pitch result events are not, events are not how you should grade pitches. That's how you should grade pitchers, but not individual pitch types. Because when you throw a pitch, it doesn't always end in an event. There's a lot of things that happen in between. You know, there's a sequence involved. There's the count involved. There's a lot of stuff involved with if it has an event or not. So the Dodgers as a whole, when they traded away Ryan Pepiot, we got excited because he had a four-seamer that would work upstairs and he didn't. And I thought, well, the Rays are the organization that would do that. And guess what? Ryan Pepiot is now dope throwing high four-seamers. What do they do? They finally get Glasnow because they're just not going to touch him. Like, Glasnow is just like, all right, I'm just going to do the thing I normally do, who, by the way, does not have elite high location. He has below average high location because he can't command it.
Because he's not really good at commanding it, yeah.
So sometimes the Dodgers are probably like, well, no, this is totally fine.
Yeah, right. They're fine with it. Just did a quick search. The Cubs, I limited it to starters because for some reason, when you do relievers, the Dodgers are actually top 10 in but I think that might be a reliever strategy. I don't know. Among starting pitchers by team, top third of the zone, Houston is first, Boston is second. Yep. Giants third, Cubs fourth, Rays fifth, Milwaukee sixth, Seattle seventh, Baltimore eighth. Like, there's a lot of teams on here that are considered pretty far out in front when it comes to pitching development.
Yeah.
And Minnesota ninth, you know. And
when you have Joe Ryan and Bailey Ober, like, that's gonna
and then the bottom of this list is not really that
Nationals.
Nice.
Oh no,
The Nationals are down there, the Cardinals are down there. The D-backs, the Royals, you know, so those aren't necessarily thought of as great pitching factories. There is one team that's on the bottom that kind of sticks out for me. Yankees are thought to be fairly progressive when it comes to pitching development. They are 26th in this stat. Sometimes I wonder if it's just about personnel.
Stroman and Clark Schmidt come right to mind there.
Yeah, so personnel and then also maybe Park. So maybe the Dodgers are, but so here the Dodgers are 23rd in top of the third, top third four seam fastball percentage among starting pitchers. So I wonder if the Dodgers think they have a Yankees type park where they're just afraid of homers.
But the thing is, so, okay, this is, I think this is the philosophy that gets me, right? Is it's too much of a focus of the park and not understanding the nuance of the pitcher. Because if there's something that I've really learned this offseason a ton and leaned into, is it's less about, I need to pitch in a place so that I prevent home runs. It's more about what place prevents home runs based on the shape of my pitch, right? I'm in belief that if you have a flat four-seamer, you don't throw it low. They're going to be able to actually get more lift on this and drive it better than if you throw it high, because high makes the angle too extreme and gives them too little of a time to actually execute it. Right? We hear a lot of the times of sinker ballers having really high home over fly ball rates. Why is that? Because when batters are going low, when you actually make it so it's not underneath the bat, it then all of a sudden, bam, goes crazy. And I just think to myself, yeah, you got to pitch to the strength of what you have to then allow it or not, right? And I'm sorry, it's like flat is bad down low. Bad paths are there. You are going to get so much more damage.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not a home run, you're going to get damage.
So we just had that thing from Lance Rozdowski saying that the batters are struggling against 18 IBB, you know, and right. That seems to me that, like, what if the Dodgers had been sort of modeling, had been like following league trends and said, okay, batters are getting better and better at IBB. So, and at targeting the top half of the zone. So therefore we're not going to go there as much.
Right. But it's then don't get Yamamoto. Go sign Marcus Stroman.
Right. Yeah,
right. You know, like it's asking a, you know, it's asking a horse to climb a tree. I know there's a better phrase than that, but that's pretty much what I'm thinking in my head here. Is it's just this, I understand this is the thing you want, but you got to understand more importantly, what is this pitcher capable of and good at? And you got to lean into their strengths more. And at the very least, like, I think we can just agree that having a 98th percentile or whatever, 92nd percentile of thigh high location for Yamamoto's four seamer isn't good. Like, it's not even, yes, he is 92nd percentile in low lock, but it's also way too much in the middle as well. And I think that's just because he's trying to go middle down as opposed to middle up. Yeah. And it drives me up the wall. And actually, on the other side of this,
do you think that's holding him back as much as not having a great slider?
Yes, 100%. I truly think that what I see right now is a four seamer that has an 11% swing strike rate, 30% ICR. Like, this is good. This is like, it's working. But like, we were promised
a 31% strikeout rate.
As a fastball?
No. Yamamoto just.
Oh, as an overall 32%. Let's see. So he went against. I went against the Cubs and the Dodgers. So the Cubs game, he did get some whiffs on his four seamer, and then he had a 46% CSW on his curve. That was a beautiful, beautiful thing. Four seamer earned called strikes against the Padres. He had splitter whiffs in that one as well. I don't know. I think that everyone was willing to pay so much money for Yamamoto. What was it, like $300 million, $325 or something in the end, for Yamamoto? And what I'm seeing as a pitcher is not that yet, right? I think there's so much more that he could be, and this is the way that he does that. It's just right there. Like, you should be top 10. And like, yeah, adding a slider and making that, or making the cutter more of a thing, like a 7% usage right now, absolutely. But man, you're just not doing anything. He has a 19% O swing on this four seamer right now. Like, come on.
And he could be going high, higher, highest, basically.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And then almost like basically tunneling it off itself.
Right. Yeah. And that makes a curveball better then too. It opens the door for a cutter or a slider more. Like, gets more pitch separation so that there's everything looks, you know, you can do the Blake Snell blueprint with, you know, that's high four seamers and low secondaries. Which is, it's funny, like, everyone's like, yeah, well, that obviously, Nick. I'm like, well, guys, don't try and do that. Stop. And some guys are not good for it. And actually, this is a segue into another guy that was just was really conversation about not utilizing your four seamers correctly. It was really what was on my mind. There is a pitcher who, well, has a four seamer that insists on saying vertical. He even says it, I believe, on his glove. It says, stay verti.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he has a four seamer that should not be upstairs. This is someone with a 18% low location. Despite, I think that this is actually made to be a low called strike four seamer. Any guess as to who that would be? He has a, this is for everybody listening as well, 0.4 height adjusted VAA. So this is like one of the steepest four seamers you will find. He has 16.5 IVB, 6.7 extension, finally increases velocity to 95 miles per hour in his last one after being around 93 and change. And has a really good slider and changeup. And his four seamer.
Is this Logan Gilbert?
This is not.
Oh, no. He's Logan Gilbert is 7.7 extension. He's the number one.
60% ICR so far with his four seamer this year with 44% usage.
Who is this?
Is really high. This is Tanner Bibee.
Oh.
And I just think it's a bad fastball. However, the best asset he has of it is a 16.5 IVB and the fact that it is extreme in one direction and is extremely steep. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that if you go high with it, you are matching the bat plane incredibly well. And you're just giving them more time to hit this pitch.
So it's good. It's good IVB from a high release point.
At 16.6?
Yeah, it's like below average IVB from a high release point. So it's a high release point that makes the sort of average-ish IVB
right.
even worse.
Right. Because exactly. So you do that low. Now you have less bat path you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. You prevent home runs on this more. And this could be your called strike pitch because it's not supposed to be his whiff pitch. It's supposed to be his called strike offering. He could do the gallon with this. Of keeping low fastballs and then curves and changeups underneath that, right? And slider and changeup for it. And, you know, I'm just screaming at me. We have a 60% ICR so far for Bibee's four seamer. Like, this thing gets hit super hard all the time. And it's not because of bad command. It's bad intent. Like, he's nailing where he generally wants to go with this a lot. And it's just not doing it the way that, you know, it's not getting him results because, yeah, that's not the way that you should be utilizing, in my view.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, and I think you can speak on this a little bit, is that I've seen people go away from good ideas based on just real small sample outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for his career, Tanner Bibee has thrown 124 four seams in the bottom third of the zone and given up a 300 batting average and a 375 slugging. That's not bad considering, you know, the other outcomes that you can get there. You know, 124 pitches thrown and in that zone and 57 of them were called strikes.
Yeah.
So you're talking about 57 called strikes. You're going to get, and then he's got out of the, so it's 57 called strikes, 124 overall, 57 called strikes, five swings and misses. So it's not a good swing and miss pitch down there.
It's but not anyway.
But already you're talking about half of the pitches are a strike.
Yeah. Right?
And then, you know, some of those are going to be poorly called balls, right? Mm-hmm. Which you can't really do anything about. So there's six of those. So now you're up to like 70 out of 124 are should have been good outcomes, right? Right. And then of the last 50, you gave up a hit a third of the time, and you didn't really give up much slugging. So I would say that's a good outcome. Well, if you limit all of this to just this year and what he's done. You know, you've got this stupid thing that happened that he's got a 500 batting average and a 500 slugging.
Right. He only has like 15. No. I want to say it's like 10. 30 thrown. 10. Okay.
So 10 thrown to the bottom of the zone.
Yeah. 10. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And so he gave up a single to Carlos Correa. And that's it. I mean, that's it. A single to Carlos Correa. Maybe that's not enough of a thing.
Deterrent or something.
You know, I mean, but sometimes it does happen. You just give right. up a
oh,
homer.
No. It and happened like, with Tyone. He talked about it where he threw this perfect cutter up and in to Brandon March, exactly what he was trying to do. And he hit a home run off of it early last year. He was just like, I don't know if I like this.
Yeah.
And he moved away from it. And he just wasn't getting the results he wanted. And it's, I get that. And, you know, we were talking about it when we did the live, you can check it on the YouTube channel. We won over one of his starts back in December.
But
it's an awesome time. But he mentioned that, and it's like, yeah, maybe I'm going to go back to that now because I need to. And that is a deterrent. There is the fact that Tanner Bibee is so. I mean, it says stay verty on his glove.
That's the thing. Like, if you've been like coached into, you know,
right.
like, I need vert, then you're going to think high at the top of the zone. I mean, this is actually kind of amazing. This year, he's thrown 10 pitches down there, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them are called strikes.
Ha!
One
no
is a foul
for that, right?
One is a foul. One is a ground out. One is a single. And one is a ball. I mean, he really got, like, you look at the BA here and you're like, 500. Ooh, maybe you shouldn't throw that. You look at the actual outcomes. You're like, no, this was a good outcome 9 out of 10 times.
Right.
You should do this.
Yeah. And we actually, by the way, we have a new stat on our site. Of course we do. That we're going to talk more about later at another time. It's called IPR, just something that I literally forgot I had this conversation with Kyle mm-hmm. like a year and a half ago. And then I saw it on the site and I was like, what is this? And they go, Nick, we came up with this before. I'm like, what? Really? We did? Oh, that sounds cool. Okay. It's IPR, which is ideal pitch results. And it essentially says, how many pitches are you throwing that can only give you good results, or like could only be a good result? And then how many of the pitches have you thrown that could be bad results? So it's essentially saying like CSW and like fouls that are, not in play and stuff like, or not mm-hmm. two strikeouts, minus really like balls in play.
And maybe even adding incorrectly called balls.
Yeah. That could theoretically happen too. Called balls is fun. Yeah. But I mean, essentially saying like, how many of these pitches are you throwing? Are you generally just always moving forward to a good thing? Not necessarily including outs. But it's just like a quick ratio of like, hey, cool, here's a good idea of how many times they demand, like, don't give themselves opportunities to be bad. Mm-hmm. Right. And there is that good example of like, yeah, you're getting the things by being, I don't know. It's, I wanted to really emphasize this, where it was two different guys who should be having two different approaches with their fastball, because about the nuance of them, of what their shape is and leaning into that.
Mm.
Right. Yamamoto, you got to go upstairs. Bybee, go downstairs. Maybe we could just have them, I don't know, lock them into a gymnasium or something like that and figure it out together.
Well, you know, I remember Walker Buehler having a lot of success, even though he had decent IVB, like throwing low in the zone for the same reasons as Strider. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
You know, sort of, you know, you can't only do up, maybe. I could see like sometimes going down with it, especially if you're kind of fastball slider, like a limited arsenal guy, then you mm-hmm. have to kind of throw down in the zone so that they have to think about more things.
Yeah, sure.
Right. If you can, if I can lock you into a location with one pitch, with both pitches, and I'm like, oh, it's always fastball up, slider down, that's just going to be easier for the hitter.
Right.
You know, so.
I mean, so that's the thing with Bybee now. You even mentioned that sometimes he still does go there, you know,
right.
And that's what naturally happens, is that mistakes still happen there. Mm. You know, not every pitcher is always going to be exactly like that, unless, like, I remember seeing this with Lance McCullers, was literally every single pitch would be down in glove side. It would start somewhere else and then just end there.
Yeah.
Maybe this finger coming back over, the curveball landing there, you know. And I remember saying to him, I was like, you got to not do that.
People can, right? Just like, sit on one location on you.
You can't just only be there, right? And, you know, we see that sometimes with, like the Friday Pirate, Brian Yarbrough, right? Yarbrough. He throws cutters and changeups and sliders backdoor to the same area all the time, right? Marcus Stroman tries to do this sometimes with a sinker and his splitter. But the main difference there is that there is a separation. Like, some of them are making it to the zone and some of them aren't. And that's how he works with that. Same with Zach Gallen throwing that low four seamer and then the curveball underneath. It's like, I don't know if this is going to stay here or if it's going to go out. But if it just because it comes the same little spot in the zone, Lance, can't do that one. You can't. And then that, and, you know, that sometimes has messed up JP Sears too, of throwing high four seamers and high sweepers. It's like, they're just looking one place for everything now.
Yeah.
So having that variety.
With Yamamoto, really, it's like, it's weird. Why would like two thirds or more, like, why would you mostly throw down?
Right.
Yeah. That doesn't make much sense to me.
I don't know. It's what you did before. Maybe.
Maybe you know, one thing that could be going on there is a miss patterns. And so they like looked at Yamamoto's miss patterns and were like, oh, when you go high in the zone, sometimes your fastball comes down into the nitro zone.
He's thrown 40% YM lock right now.
Right.
He's already there.
let's just have you aim at the nitro zone.
Right. Might as well, you know, let's get this over with.
Oh, man.
Well, I mean, the reason I bring these things up is, I mean, yes, I am obviously like in my armchair. I'm not those players, all this kind of stuff. I'm sure they have reasons for it.
Well, it's kind of amazing that he has a 32% strikeout rate. Right. Then.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a testament to this.
It must be a tunneling thing. You throw your sliders low. So we want you to play the fastball off of the slider. Like we want.
Well, yeah, it's really, I mean, it's mostly curveball with him, but I think the curve's been really successful for Yamamoto. Mm-hmm. I think that's been a big part of his whole attack. And there is still something about that four seamer that I don't think we're quite getting from just, it's not an easy pitch to hit still. There's something about it, but and maybe the splitter is actually nullifying a lot of this too. And maybe that's part of the reason why he's staying low is because the splitter is looking like that a ton too. Someone wants, you know, they want to keep that tunnel. Maybe. I guess for me, I like these guys both. I think both of them could be better. And that's where I get my emotion from is I've said a lot of things about Tanner Bibee not being the same like sub 3 ERA guy or really being this like budding stud because of last year and his command being a little bit off.
He also falls into our conversation about like pitchers with the slider is their best pitch.
Right. Right. And even that though last year we're like spotting it was some games just like, all right, here it is. You know, it worked great. Same thing with this changeup, but the one weakness has always been this fastball. And I'm just like, oh man, like, wait, hold on. We can actually make that work.
Get more out of this fastball.
Extreme on that other side. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that is to me an exciting moment. And for me, it's, you know, this is a really stupid joke. Patrick Corbin is throwing cutters this year all of a sudden. Right. Right. You know, yeah. I remember this and like you got so upset with me trying to find a guy I'm excited about, and not excited about. And you're like, Patrick Corbin, how could you? Yeah. I'm like, well, okay. But here's the thing. Corbin was a sinker slider guy. Which was a bad pitch of those two? You know this. Of those two pitches. Like Corbin's best pitch is a slider. You know.
Yeah, slider. Yeah, yeah.
So sinker's the bad one. But then this cutter shows
right up. Now, like, every one of his pitches is under 90 stuff plus.
Right. It's
actually,
it's
the great. Cutter is his best pitch.
Hold on, Eno. We're going to get there. Okay. So here he is in this plane. He's like, oh, man, I'm going to be throwing some cutters and stuff. And I was thinking, oh, my gosh, you could kind of do the Graham Ashcraft. Like, you could be throwing sliders.
Just like 10 miles an hour slower.
Yeah, right, right. But what I mean is just like going ham on sliders to both handedness.
Uh-huh.
And then cutters where you throw to righties and then sinkers inside to lefties. Like, damn, that could work really well and great. So go and try and do that. So then I remember I put out a roundup. I think the second game of the year, he literally just goes like sinker slider only and then throws like three cutters. And they go, oh, my gosh, Corbin. Can you please, like, why not try the cutter? What do you got to lose?
What do you have to lose at this point?
Like, just go and do this. So what does Corbin do in his next start, Eno?
Does he throws do the plan?
30% cutters.
Nice.
But throws, like, five sliders. Not what I meant, Corbin. He ran the sinker. That's the bad one. It drives me nuts. So he threw like 10 or 12 of them in his last one. I'm like, all right, whatever you'd want to do, man. You go do you. It's fine.
He's just playing out the string.
That's what I'm getting at. I see the way. There's a way. We can see how this could be better and good. And don't you just want to risk for that? Well, you got to lose.
He's not playing for free agency. He's just playing for retirement.
Just hang out, man. Let's have some fun.
All right. I'll text Sean Doolittle the plan. All right.
There we go. Please do. But what do you got going on? I know you had to do an early one today. So what were you doing?
Oh, I'm going to Las Vegas for a show at the Sphere.
Okay, that is not what I expected. I was like, Fish. Oh yeah, I'm gonna talk to Dylan Cease about his new cutter. I'm like, oh, awesome.
At the Sphere.
Yeah, can you please keep prodding
Dylan's an old white man.
I don't care about the Sphere. Get out of here. Whatever. Alex Bass had to do stuff with that. That's great. Have a wonderful time at the Sphere.
I will.
But that sounds really fun, actually. That sounds awesome. Yeah. But yeah.
And then my ranks go up Friday.
Nice.
Got some cool stuff on the Google Doc for people. Minor league stuff plus. Projections, rest of season projections from Jordan Rosenblum using stuff plus. So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
some good stuff. We hope that by, I think the goal is by May 15th, if not earlier, to have our PLV minor league apps for both hitters and pitchers. So
I mean, I think the frustrating thing, you know, for both of us will probably be the fact that we don't have full samples.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times, like when, like I tweeted out like, you know, top 10 minor league stuff plus guys. And people were like, where's this guy?
Single A, double A.
Yeah, exactly. Places where I don't have the
stats. Yeah, right. It's like, we can't do it.
So, you know, it also means though that like that same sample thing that we're talking about WBC could be in effect.
Well, one thing that actually what we're doing is I'm trying to at least is say, telling the guys, like, I don't want to compare this to other minor leaguers. I don't talk to other minor leaguers.
That's why somebody said, doesn't it seem like you don't have enough good stuff plus guys, you know, on this list? Because the 10th guy had a 98 stuff plus.
Right. But it's because compared to major leaguer.
Yeah. And I was like, maybe not. I mean, I've talked to farm directors who say, if my guys have major leagues pitch grades, why are they in the minor leagues? That's been, I think, more of the way that people think. And so, maybe it's not that, and we're also talking about triple A. It's not double A. It's not where the best prospects are. It's where people, you know, rehab, and you know, where people, where you stick a guy that you're not sure about. That's where it's finishing school for Ben Brown, where it's just like, well, how are we going to get you to command the ball? You know, that's why Ben Brown had the best stuff plus, you know, and why Jared Jones, because they did have something to iron out. They had that one last wrinkle to iron out. Some guys will just skip triple A, skip ABS. And go right to the major leagues.
And for us, I mean, I know this is the craft, but also what's so exciting for me, and it has been always for PLV, is that I've actually always said that it's more of a hitting stat than it is a pitching stat.
Mm-hmm.
Because it essentially says that with every event, if you have one variable defined, then you can actually do the whole formula. And we just didn't have, you know, once you have the pitch quantifying tool, then we can actually say, great, this is how good you are as a hitter, because then we can really say, you should have swung at this one, you shouldn't have swung at that one,
and beyond discipline,
that would have been this, now you're doing better against that kind of thing or worse against that kind of thing. And to be able to do that with hitters in the minors, because the minors is so hard to read through data of what was their opponent like, you know, was it like, you see Jackson Holliday going like over 13 or whatever to start his career, finally gets it or whatever it was. It's because, yeah, these pitchers are better than what you've seen. And obviously there's a lot of things going on, but like, we don't have
only one Jackson Job to face in his league. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe you just go through the whole year and never face him. And like, even for major leaguers, if it gets closer to the playoffs and stuff, to think about not only who has good decisions versus good stuff, but who performs well against good stuff.
Oh, that's a really good, really good thing. And
because in the postseason, you're just going to see much, much better stuff across the board. It's a little bit
earmarked that for like an August or September article of like, all right, these are the guys in these teams that should perform better than you expect.
Yeah. I mean, you're winnowing, the same thing that's happening in the minor leagues. You're doing in the major leagues when it goes to postseason, it's sort of winnowing down to the best players.
Right. Oh, that's super fun. Well, enjoy the sphere. Okay. Maybe I can convince you to talk to Dylan Cease because he has new cutters now. I threw two of them again yesterday.
I got to talk to him. I only talked to him about that crazy EFIS, so I need more time with him.
Well, tell him that he's doing the wrong approach. He's trying to throw it too pristine, as in like up and in and tight and like the perfect cutter. I'm like, no. Do the Kodai Senga, like just get it in the zone. Who cares? Because it's already going to be moving differently than everything else.
It's not the slider. It's not the four seam.
Right. They're going to make contact with it and then not do good things against it. Like, you're going to get the cheap strikes. That's what you need. So you don't walk five guys like you did yesterday. You know, you got the Cease. I'm so excited for you. Eno, can't thank you enough for being here. This is the best. Have a great time at the Sphere. We'll do it again next week. I'm looking forward to your rankings, but that is going to be it for this episode of The Craft. On behalf of Eno Saris, my name is Nick Pollock. We're excited to talk about The Craft again next week.